Good morning, everyone. Parshas Bahaloischa. So let's start with a quick overview and then we'll get into the parsha. So lots of different things happening in this parsha. We have the mitzvah of kindling the menorah every day in the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash. We have the whole parsha preparing and inaugurating the Levim to do their service. The famous portion of Pesach Sheni is in this parsha as well. Second Pesach, a second chance. The way the Jews would travel and how they would follow the cloud of Hashem to direct them and guide them in their travels, and how they would travel and how they would camp, including the making of the chatzotzreis, the trumpets, which Hashem wanted the Jews to make for different purposes. I have a very famous piece which we're going to go into a bit more a little later called Vayihi b'Nesoya Ha'aron, when the ark travels, which is what we say when we take up the Torah. That comes from this week's parasha, the Stup Sukkim. We have an unfortunate part of the parasha, which is when the Jews complained and they wanted meat and so on. And then the parasha ends with Aaron and Miriam talking Lashon Hara, Moshe Rabbeinu. Miriam got punished and the camp had to wait for her for 7 days. Okay. So what we're going to do today is we'll look at the first part of the parasha a little bit first and then connect it to a very fascinating concept, a general concept, which has to do with the middle of the parasha, that section which deals with the Vayihi b'Nesoya Ha'aron. Let's have a look at the handout. Let's just learn a few psukim first of all. So let's have a look. Number one. By Daber Hashem and Moshe Lemer, Hashem spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu saying, Daber el Aharon v'amarta elof, speak to Aaron and say to him, Ba'aloischa sanoris, when you kindle the lamps, el mulpene ha-menorah, facing the stem of the menorah, your iru shiva sanoris, the seven candles should burn. And then the pasuk says, "Vayas ken Aaron, Aaron did that, el mul panei menorah, in front of the menorah, he'elo neiraseo, he kindled the candles, ka'asher tziva Hashem es Moshe, as Hashem had commanded Moshe." Now, we didn't have a parasha shiur last week, so we get to talk a little bit about last week's parasha as well. Because what does the first Rashi say? If you have a look at number two. So Rashi says, Lama nismacha, right? You see that baloscha? Lama nismacha parshas ha-menoira, the parshas ha-nasim. Why is the story of the menoira come directly after the last part of last week's parsha, which is the inauguration of the Mishkan and all the sacrifices that the nasim, the leaders of the tribes, brought? Just to give you context, just to refresh your memory, so that happened on Rosh Chodesh Nisan for the first 12 days of Nisan. Each day a different tribe brought a whole set of sacrifices to inaugurate the Mizbeach, right? And it was considered a big yontif for each tribe, which is why even till today, the first 12 days of Nisan are considered special days. We don't say Tachnun, and so on and so forth. Which then results in the whole month not saying Tachnun, because between those 12 days, and Pesach, and Erev Pesach, and so on, most of the month is no Tachnun, so we don't do it a whole month. But it all starts from those 12 days. So that's what happened, right? Now, 12 tribes brought 12 sets of sacrifices, excluding Levi, excluding Aaron. Says Rashi, Lefi kishara Aaron chanukah sanasim, because when Aaron saw the inauguration of the leaders of the tribes, chol shodaita, he felt weak, weak emotionally, in other words. Shelehoyo imohem b'chanukah, he was not with them. He didn't take part, he didn't participate, he wasn't included in the inauguration of the Mizbeach. Loi hu v'loi shifto, not him and not his tribe. Amalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem saw that he was upset. Hashem said to him, Chayecha, I promise you, Sholcho gedoyla mishalehem, what you will have is greater than what they will have. Sh'ato madlik umeiti v'saneiros, you will have the mitzvah of kindling and cleaning the candles. Okay. Then there's the next Rashi, which we'll come back to a little bit later. Just have a look at number three, first of all. Also, there's a famous Rashi, which we've talked about in the past, but we'll talk about it a little bit differently today. It says, Vayas Kain Aaron. Aaron did this. He followed. It says, Rashi, Lahagid Shifchoi. The Torah is expressing the praise for Aaron. Lahagid Shifchoi Shel Aaron. It's a bit of a typo there. This is to express the praise of Aaron, complimenting him, Shiloh Shino, he didn't deviate from what he was told to do. He did it exactly the way Hashem had commanded the mitzvah to be done. Okay. So let's just mention a few things here. First of all, there's an interesting little comment from the Sochach over here, from the Shem Yishmuel, because there's a famous question which Ramban raises, a famous Ramban. Aaron felt left out. He didn't get to bring all those korbanos, all the sacrifices for the inauguration of the Mishkan, right? So what does Hashem do? He says, yours is greater than theirs. I'll give you the kindling of the menorah. So the Ramban says, what do you mean? Why is kindling the menorah greater than the sacrifices? Right? There's bringing of ketores, there's incense bringing, there's the sacrifices outside of the Mizbech and the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash, all these different rituals. Why specifically kindling the menorah is a ritual which stands out that he was appeased by, so to speak, that he was placated by the fact that he was given this. So the Ramban makes a very famous comment which is always talked about around Hanukkah time, right? The Ramban says the following, that what was great about the menorah was this, that everything else in the Beis HaMikdash came to an end. When the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, we don't have korbanos, we don't have incense, we don't have all the other rituals that took place in the Beis HaMikdash, we don't have them today, right? The exception is the menorah, because the whole story of Hanukkah came about with the second Beis HaMikdash from the Chashmei Naim. The miracle of the oils resulted in the mitzvah of Hanukkah, which is to kindle the menorah, which we do today to commemorate the miracle that happened with the menorah. So in other words, the candles of the menorah are eternal because they continue on in the menorah, right? Which is what they always talk about in Hanukkah time to emphasize the holiness within the Hanukkah menorah, that actually the Hanukkah menorah have the same kedusha as the candles of the Beis HaMikdash, because really it's a continuation based on this Ramban, and so on and so forth. So that's one of the explanations, the more famous explanation of what the connection was and how Aaron was compensated, so to speak, by having that mitzvah instead of bringing korbanos. The Sochach makes a very interesting comment, and he gives a little bit of a different take on it. He says the following, the reason why Aaron wanted the menorah. And he says, what's the difference between the Kohanim and the Levim? More based on the sort of a Kabbalistic idea. Because it's famous that the Kohen is the idea of Chesed, the Levi is the idea of Gvura. What does this all mean, right? So Kohanim, their function, particularly through the Avodah and through the Korbanos, is to bring the Shechina into the world. So it's to bring God in closer to the world, right? That's the function of the Kohen. He says he connects heaven to earth, right? The Levim were different. The Levim's function was to elevate the Jews, to bring the Jew closer to heaven, right? We find that that's why, for example, the Levim's, their function was to sing. We know that song has that, and Kohanim didn't sing. It says in many places, Kohanim b'chashoy, the Kohanim served Hashem silently, right? They were just about bringing Hashem into the world, more passive. But the Levim were about singing, and singing was, when you sing, you elevate yourself, right? It was to lift up, to elevate the people. And they would sing by the korbanos. So the korban itself, I mean, there's different, these things are explained differently in different places, and we've explained them differently at some time, but you take a pirush, take commentary the way it's explained. So he says the idea of a korban is to bring kedusha into the world, right? To bring Hashem into the world, whereas a levi is to elevate the Jew. Now, don't forget, Aaron primarily was a levi. I mean, he came from the tribe of Levi. He was then chosen, him and his sons, to be Kohanim. So Aaron didn't want to lose, although he was given the gift of Kahuna, but he didn't want to lose the aspect of being a Levi, right? Which is why Hashem gave him the mitzvah menorah. That's the idea. Why? Because the mitzvah of menorah is the kindling of the menorah, ba'aloyscha, to make the flames go up. We know that the seven branches of the menorah represent the seven types of neshamas. And we know this idea of Aaron kindling the menorah was this concept of elevating the souls, elevating the neshamas of the Jewish people. So when Aaron got the mitzvah of the menorah, this guaranteed, although he was a Kohen, and therefore his main function was bringing Hashem into the world, but he also didn't lose the aspect of Levim through the mitzvah of menorah. He was compensated because then that meant he also had the concept of being a Levi at the same time, which was just interesting thoughts. The Kedushas Levi has a little interesting take on something here. There's a Gemara on this parasha of the menorah which says, it says, when Aaron will kindle the menorah, right? There was a mitzvah to kindle the menorah every day in the Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara in Shabbos says, V'chila oira hu tzarich, does Hashem need the light of the menorah? Right? And the Gemara continues, surely Hashem doesn't need the light, because all 40 years that the Jews were in the desert, they followed the light of Hashem. In other words, He gave the Jewish people light. He didn't need the light that we kindle. That's what the Gemara says. So on that, and the Gemara answers whatever it answers, that it was to illuminate the world, whatever the case is, which is actually why, by the way, the candelabra, when it was kindled, all the wicks didn't actually, they weren't straight. They actually had to be tilted, but tilted towards the middle of the menorah, which is not how you would normally kindle a candelabra. You would do the other way around. If you were going to tilt the wicks, you would tilt them outside so that the light should spread, right? But that was to emphasize that it's not about the light. Hashem doesn't need the light of the menorah. That's the one thing, right? It's more about giving the world. It's more about Hashem spreading a light. It's not like to illuminate the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash didn't need electricity. That wasn't the issue, right? Okay, so on that Gemara, Tosfos makes an interesting comment. Tosfos says, he understands the question that why does Hashem need the light? Surely because we always follow Hashem's light, right? But what does the Gemara mean when it says, does Hashem need the oira, the light of the menorah? Didn't the Jews follow His light all 40 years in the desert? So Tosfos says, why is it a question only from the 40 years? We're always following Hashem's light. That's not why. What's specific about those 40 years, right? So the Baditch Rav says like this. He says, the question of the Gemara is like this. First of all, it uses, oir. The word light is oir, but also oira is light in the feminine, correct? It's how it's received more. It's more, right, the recipient of the light. So he says like this, that we know that normally Hashem guides us always, but normally He guides us in the system of Teva, system of nature. And he says nature is symbolized in the word, the feminine of Oiro. It's more how the world receives the light. It's from the world perspective, right? Whereas the 40 years that the Jews went in the desert was more supernatural, right? So that's what the Gemara asks. The Gemara says, Gemara is asking a specific question. Hashem told Aaron to kindle the menorah, in other words, to create natural light. V'chila oira hu tzarich, does Hashem need the system of nature? Says Tosfos, what does the Gemara mean? The Gemara is trying to ask, does Hashem need us to have the system of nature when at that time the system of supernature was taking care of us? So why do we need nature? That's only a question for those 40 years. That's why it's just an interesting comment about the question that Tosfos asks. But finally in this piece, I want to just share with you a little nice interpretation from the Ishbitzer on something which we've talked about before, but he gives a very nice slant on it. So we learned this pasuk that Aaron did as he was told, right? So Rashi says, why does the pasuk have to say that? Because it's complimenting Aaron for not deviating, for not going away from what Hashem had instructed. So all the Mepharshim asked the question. I mean, that's a really strange thing to compliment Aaron. Obviously, I mean, we'd expect him to follow instructions, right? Okay. So there's two things, yeah? I mean, obviously, he was told the mitzvah, the kid of Noir. Of course he listened. He listened with all the details. Obviously he did, right? It's Aaron. I mean, every regular Jew would, but especially Aaron. So what's the compliment? What's the phrase? Okay. So there's two famous answers given. One, it's not the one that Ishbitzer mentions, but I'll just tell you anyways, that Aaron was a person, right? A regular, we do a mitzvah, so we get told what to do. Now, we know that every mitzvah, there's two parts of the mitzvah. There's the details, the specifics, the halachas. And then there's also the spiritual mechanism of the mitzvah, what is happening behind the scenes, right? Every mitzvah creates an explosion. It creates a spiritual explosion, a godly explosion. In Kabbalah, it's called Yichudim, Elyonim. Things are happening in the supernal worlds. Revelations are taking place. Lights are being brought down to the world. Whatever is happening, right? Amazing things are happening. Most people, when we do a mitzvah, we learn about some of these things that are happening, but we don't see it. We just see the mitzvah. And we have the specifics, and we follow the halacha, and we do the mitzvah. The great tzaddikim are able to see what is happening when the mitzvah. They can see, they can actually feel, they can experience when they do the mitzvah what is taking place, right? So the greatness, normally when a person gets told to do a mitzvah and it gets a bunch of specifics, exactly how the mitzvah has to be carried out, or pi halacha, there's no big deal in following all the details, right? When you come to a very great tzaddik, someone like Aaron, who was given the mitzvah of menorah, and when he would kindle a menorah, he would see what's happening, he would experience what's happening. There's always a danger when you can get so swept away with the unbelievable things that are happening in the higher worlds that you might forget about the mundane, not mundane, but the ordinary specifics, details of how the halacha has to carry it out, right? Because of the hislavus, the ecstasy, the excitement, the passion of the mitzvah, it's very easy then to lose focus on the, hold on a second, you need to hold it this way, you need to climb the stairs that way and kindle the wick this way and so on and so forth, like all mitzvahs have halachas. So the compliment of Aaron is that as a tremendous tzaddik, or someone who understood what was happening when the menorah was being kindled, nevertheless, he was able to stay grounded and stay focused on the specific of the mitzvahs. Okay. So that's the one pshat. But the pshat that the Ishbitzer mentions is also something I've shared with you before, but he ties it into a very beautiful Gemara, which I'll share with you in a minute. And the answer is as follows. The answer is, what does it mean he didn't deviate? It meant like this, that we know that a mitzvah is always very exciting when you do it the first time, right? And that even has a place halachically, for example. The mitzvahs that we only do once in a while, we make Shechiyonu. Why do we make Shechiyonu? Because Shechiyonu is a mitzvah that was designed to make on a simcha, on a great joy. So when you eat matzah for the first time, you haven't eaten matzah for a whole year, we say Shechiyonu. The first night when we kindle Chanukah candles, we make Shechiyonu. We don't make it the second night, because the simcha isn't as great. But we make it the first time, it's Shechiyonu. Sitting in the sukkah for the first time, all these things, right? Yontif and so on. So Aaron HaKohen was given the mitzvah of kindling the menorah, right? This was all the way in the beginning of the Mishkan, which was 1 year after the Yidden came out of Mitzrayim, and Aaron had 39 years to do this mitzvah every single day. Says the Pasuk, Vayas Kain Aaron. Aaron did this, says the Pasuk, says Rashi, it's a compliment Aaron never changed. The excitement, the passion, the enthusiasm he had for the mitzvah on the first day was exactly the same on the last day. Same simcha, right? Which is a tremendous lesson. I mean, we do mitzvahs every single day. I mean, for example, when we wash for bread on Shabbos, right? It's a great mitzvah. It's the same mitzvah like kindling Chanukah candles or eating matzah on Pesach. We don't necessarily get so excited with this mitzvah, right? We pay a lot of attention to eating matzah, to lay Chanukah candles, but to pay attention, we go to the sink and wash and make a bracha? No. But it's a mitzvah, the same thing, right? So that's put on tefillin every day, whatever the case is, all these things. So it's a kind of a lesson, right? It also tied into a famous pasuk in Tehillim. I'm sure I've shared this with you before, but I'll just say it again because it fits into this idea of David HaMelech in Tehillim in chapter 27, Chav Zayin, David Hashem Oiri, where he asks Hashem, he says like this, he says, Acha sha'alti me'es Hashem, I've got one request from Hashem, Oysa Avakesh, which I'm going to continue to ask, and he says, Shifti beveis Hashem, I want to dwell in the house of Hashem. Ulevaker beheicholoi, one translation of the word levaker is to visit his sanctuary, right? So the Mefarshim asks, it's a contradiction from the first part of the pasuk to the second. Shifti beveis Hashem is asking to live in the house of Hashem, but then he's asking to visit the house of Hashem. Which one is it? And the answer is the same idea. He obviously wanted to live there, but he wanted to always be like a visitor. You know, a visitor, the first week they're there, you make a big tzimis out of them. Obviously, after 3 weeks, no one looks at them anymore, right? Because they're either part of the house or they're a nuisance. One of the two, right? So, David HaMelech says, no, my request is shifti beveis Hashem. I want to dwell in the house of Hashem. But ulevakir b'yechole, every single day, I want to be like a visitor. I want to be like, it's a new thing, it's an amazing thing, I'm visiting and for the first time, and so on and so forth. The Ishbitzer, the Me'ah Shiloyach, ties us into a very beautiful Gemara. It says like this. The Gemara says, it's a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. The Gemara is talking about, particularly in the times of the Beis Hamikdash, although many people take it even nowadays. The Gemara says that Chayev Adam Letayrus Atzmoy Beregel. A person is supposed to purify themselves when it comes a Yontif, right? Basically, the idea of going to Mikveh before Yontif comes, right? How do we know this? How do we know this? Shenemar says, that you shouldn't. Let me explain it. The word nevela is a dead carcass, a dead animal, right? A nevela, the definition of a nevela is an animal that is kosher but died without being shechted properly, either just by natural causes or was shechted incorrectly, whatever the case is, right? Not to be confused with the word trefa in the Torah. Like we use the word treif as a general term. Anything that's not kosher we call treif. But actually in the Torah, treif is a very specific description of something. Treif is a kosher animal that is unwell. Like if you shecht an animal properly, then you find out the lung is no good or whatever the case is. That's called, you're not allowed to eat the animal, that's called a trefa, right? If it had one of 48 diseases, I think it's 48, or whatever the number is, right? Okay. But an avela means a dead animal, basically, right? Now, the halacha is that if someone touches a dead animal, they become tomei, they become impure, which would then restrict them from doing certain things, like going to the Beis HaMikdash or eating sacrificial meat, whatever the case is, and in order to become pure, they have to go to the mikveh, right? Now, I mean, we're not worried about it today because most laws of purity and impurity don't have practical relevance today, right? But okay. Now, the Gemara says, uvenivlosom loisigo, there's a prohibition, you're not allowed to touch a dead animal. So the Gemara proves there's no such prohibition. Like, if someone happens to touch a dead animal, right, then he becomes tome. And if he wants to do certain things, he has to go to mikveh. There's no obligation to go to mikveh. There's no obligation, other than a kohen, with a dead body, with a human body, there's no obligation to be pure. The Gemara does tell us that there were certain people in the Beis HaMikdash times who lived with purity. They always made sure they were pure, and if they happened to, they never did anything that would intentionally make them impure, and if they did, they would always make sure to go through the purification process quickly. But that's a stringency, it's not a obligation. So therefore the Gemara proves this from many places. Therefore the Gemara doesn't understand, what does the pasuk mean when it says, uvniv lossam loisigo, that you shouldn't touch a dead animal, right? Therefore, the Gemara says, I must conclude that what the Torah is referring to, it's a whole Gemara there, it's not necessary to go through all the details, but the conclusion of the Gemara is that the Pasuk is referring to before Yontif. That the Torah is telling you when you come, you oile l'rega, when you do your pilgrimage, when you come to the Beis HaMikdash for a Yontif, uvniv lossam loisigo, don't touch a dead animal, because you must make sure that when you come into the Yontif, you come in a pure state. Right? Okay. Interesting says, he says, this is what it means, the same thing by Vayaskera. It's like this. What does the Torah mean when you've lost some loisigo? You shouldn't touch a dead animal. A dead animal, what's the definition of a dead animal? A dead animal is that it doesn't have any life, it doesn't have any passion, it doesn't have any vibrance, right? So the Torah is saying like this. Chayev Adam Latair Atzmoy. It's like a play on the words, a little bit of a different twist. When it comes a yontif, when it comes a special time, when it comes a mitzvah you do with passion, with excitement, you have to purify yourselves. Why? To make sure that afterwards, when you keep doing these things, that you don't end up touching a dead animal. You don't lose your vitality. You have to maintain the chayis. You have to maintain the kedusha. You have to maintain the holiness. So therefore, this you have to do when things are going well. In other words, when it comes a yontif, when it's a time of obvious kedusha, it's a time of obvious life, obvious passion and excitement, let tyrats, we have to purify ourselves, because if not, you're going to end up touching a dead animal, you're going to end up being attached to a dead animal, meaning an entity which has no life. You're going to keep doing mitzvahs, but it's going to be lifeless. And that's not a good thing. Therefore, he says, that's the same idea over here, that the compliment of Aaron was that he was given this amazing gift from Hashem, the mitzvah of kindling the menorah, but he kept it up. He could have just not done it properly in the beginning, and therefore had the happiness but not maintained it. But he was able to maintain it, and that's why he was complimented. Okay. Good. Now, let's just learn one more Rashi on this, and then we're going to go and connect it to something else. Have a look at number two, I mean. So, Rashi has a famous comment here where he comments on the pasuk, which tells Aaron to kindle the menorah. How do you normally say kindling in Hebrew? How do we say it when we light candles? Lahadlik, right? That's how you make Shabbos candles. You say lahadlik, Hanukkah lahadlik. But here it says, it doesn't say when you madlik the menorah. It says b'haloischa, when you bring up, right? Says Rashi, Ba'aloi Scho, it's the second paragraph in number two. Says Rashi, Al Shem Shehalav Oile, because the flame goes up, Kosuv Behadla Kosun Loshen Aliyah. Therefore, with lighting the menorah, it uses the expression of Aliyah, which is going up. What does that mean? It's a halacha. The halacha is Shetzarich lechadlik, that Aaron was told when he kindles the menorah, he has to kindle it, but he has to hold the match there enough time. Achetehei shalheves, oile me'ileho. Those three words. Shalheves, the flame, must go up on its own. In other words, if he kindles the menorah, but then he takes away the match too soon, and then eventually it goes out, that's not good. You have to kindle it in such a way that it goes up on its own. It's burning well on its own. Shalheves, o oile me'ileho. It's a flame which is going up on its own. Okay, hold the thought there. Now, let's go to something else in the parasha. So, in this parasha, there's, as I told you, there's the paragraph of Vayehi bin Aaron, right? You're familiar with that. That's what we sing when we take out the Torah and Shul, right? Those two psukim. And it comes from this week's parasha. I'm just going to show you the context, and it comes in this week's parasha in a very strange way. Let's have a look at number four. So, it says over there like this. It says, Vayisu Mahar Hashem. So eventually the Jews traveled from the mountain of Hashem, Derech Shloishes Yomim, away of 3-day journey. The Aroin Bris Hashem and the Ark Nosea Lifneim would travel before them, Derech Shloishes Yomim, 3 days ahead, Lasur Lehem Menucha, to seek out a resting place for them. In other words, that's how it used to happen. Now, there's a whole machlokes, which ark we're talking about over here. Rashi says it's not the ark that was in the Mishkan, it was a special ark that used to go out to war with them. They traveled in front of them, it guided them, and they followed the ark. Then it says, Va'anana Hashem Aleim, and the cloud of Hashem was upon them, Yoimim during the day, V'nosim and Amachna, as they moved from the camp, and they were following them. Okay. Then turn over. Okay, you see this Vayehi bin Aaron, you see that, yeah? You see what's before that? That little symbol before Vayehi bin Aaron? Yeah. That's actually in the Torah. It's an upside down nun.
No, upside down, okay.
Right. What's that? Yeah, it's like a bracket. It's like a inverted nun, whatever you call it, right? Yeah. And that's in the Torah, both before Vayehi bin Aaron and toward and the end of the second pasuk. So it's actually in the actual Torah you have that as well, right? Okay. So what does it say? It says these two very famous words. It says, Vayehi bin Soyahore, when the ark would travel, Vayoyim Moshe and Moshe Rabbeinu would say, Kumo Hashem, advance Hashem, rise Hashem, so to speak. Vayofutsu oivecha, and let your enemies be scattered. Vayonusu misanecha miponecha, let your enemies flee before you. Rashi says, what does it mean? The enemies of Hashem? Hashem doesn't have enemies. It means the enemies of the Jewish people, because whoever starts up with the Jewish people is like starting up with Hashem. Very timely pasuk. So everyone, they should be scattered and they should flee. Okay. Then uvenucha yomar. That's a pasuk we say when we take out the Torah, right? Because we take it after the uvenucha yomar. And when it came to rest, he would say shuva Hashem, return Hashem, river voice Alpha Yisrael to the tens of thousands, the myriads of the Jewish people. That's those two psukim, and they're bracketed by these two upside-down nuns, whatever you call it. Then, right after that, the pasuk starts with a very sad part of what happened. It says, Vayehi yom kemis oinanim. The people started to complain. Rab ozen Hashem in a very bad way before Hashem. Vayishma Hashem and Hashem, we heard. Vayichar apani was angry. Vatibur bom eish Hashem. And then there was a fire. Vatoichol b'tzei hamachne, which started to affect the Jewish people. And then the chumash continued with the whole thing about they started complaining for food. And you have the whole thing with Slav, and Hashem, and Moshe Rabbeinu says, how are we going to get so much food and so many birds? And there was, Hashem said, I could do it, but then the quails came and they grabbed it, and some of them died from it, and it was all not a very happy part of the Chumash. Okay. Says the Gemara in Shabbos, a very fascinating thing, I don't know if you know this, but it's a very fascinating concept. Tanur Rabbana, this is the Gemara in Shabbos, right? Number 5. Bin Soya Ha'oren Vayomer Moshe. This paragraph, Vayehi bin Soya Ha'oren and Moshe Rabbeinu said, and so on, says the Gemara, Parsha Zu Osso HaKadosh Baruch Hu Simonios. This parsha, this paragraph, Hashem made little signs, Milamailo Lamato, before and afterwards. Why? So there's two reasons given. We're going to focus on the second one, but let me do them both. Loimar, to tell us, She'ein zem mekoyma, this is actually not where it should be. And Hashem placed it here because just before this parsha, there was a story of the Yidden going away from Har Sinai and Yisro not wanting to come with them, and that was like a bad thing. And then we have the parsha of them complaining. So Hashem didn't want to have one negative parasha after another, so he plunked this paragraph. It really belongs somewhere else, but he plunked it here just to make interruption, and that's why there's like the brackets before and after to misplace. Okay, we're not going to go into that, what that means now. I want to go into the next thing. Rebbe Omer. Rebbe says, no, lo Hashem was there. That's not what it means. That's not the reason. Elos, what is the reason for the two upside down nuns? Listen to this. Shesefer choshuv hu bifnei atzmai. Because this paragraph is an important book of the Torah on its own. It's like a standalone book of the Chumash. How many books does that make the Chumash into? How many? Seven. Well, if by Bahimin Sur is a new book, then before, otherwise the book ends just before, and the book ends before, right? So Bar Midbar gets split into two, three, right? Right? So you always thought there were five books of the Chumash. Apparently not, there's seven, right? Amar Rabbi Yonasan, Rabbi Yonasan, and this is what Rabbi says, right? Rabbi Yonasan says, and the Gemara continues, there's a pasuk that says, Chotzva Amudeha Shiva. It's a pasuk that says that the wisdom was built in the house of Hashem, and then it says, it's a pasuk in Mishlei where it says, talking about the woman, which is like the metaphor for the Jewish people. It says Bechachma Bansa Beisa, she built her house with wisdom, and then it says Chotzva Amudeha Shiva, she carved its seven pillars. Right? What does it mean, seven pillars? Eila Shiva Sifrei Torah. These are the seven books of the Torah. That's what we learn. Kaman Ozlahod Amar, Shul Brav Nachman. Who does this go like? Kaman the Rebbe. It goes according to what Rebbe said, that if you take Vayehi bin Soya Ha'ora and then you make it a separate book, that means there's seven books of the Torah. And seven books of the Torah, that's what the Pasuk in Mishlei means, that she built her house on wisdom and she carved out the seven pillars, referring to the seven books of the Torah. Right? Do you know the seven books of the Torah? No. Okay. Because there are five books of the Torah, right? So what does it mean, the seven books? Which one is it? So I'm going to share with you a beautiful talk from the Rebbe from 1991. At a Fabringen this week's parasha, Baloischa. And he talked about it and he connected this with the first Rashi that I just learned with you about the flame going up on its own. And he gives a very beautiful perspective on the whole thing. He says, first of all, we know there's five books. I mean, so obviously, if we say there's seven books of the Torah, it doesn't negate the fact that there are five books, right? The number five must be still significant, because the proof is that you didn't even know until now there were seven books of the Torah. I mean, because we know there's five books, right? We teach it to every child. We haven't revised our numbering on the Chumash, right? And I mean, even if you look at the Sefer Torah, the truth is, you know, that there's a way you can tell when a new book starts. There's actually, in the Torah, there's four blank lines between each book, the book. I don't know if you know that, right? Between Bereshit and Shemos, Shemos and Yikra, between Yikra and Midbar, between Midbar and Dvarim. There's four blank lines in the Torah, right? We don't find that anywhere else. We find paragraphs where a line ends and there's a line missing or whatever, but not four blank lines. I mean, and there's no four blank lines between Vayhi bin Sayara. There's upside down nuns maybe, but there's not, right? So there's definitely a concept of five books. Yet we learn now there's obviously also a concept of seven books. We need to understand what that is. First issue. The second issue is this. If there's seven books, we have a big problem. Because it means that the sixth book starts off, we have a concept, we always start with something good. We start and we end with something good, right? According to this, how does the sixth book start, right? So we've got Bereshis, Shmois, Vayikra. Bamidbar now gets split into three, right? Bamidbar until Vayehi bin Sa'a. Then Vayehi bin Sa'a. And then the new book starts. How does it start? We just started it. Vayehi Yom Kemisonim, and the people complained. That's not a way to start a Chumash, right? And thirdly, and this is very typical of the way, of the Rebbe's perspective of how always things have to fit, because things happen by Hashgacha Pratis. If we have this idea of seven books, which is an idea coming out of this concept of Vayehi bin Sa'a, is a separate sefer, right? Where does it happen? It happens in Parshas Baloischa. That must be significant. It's got to mean something. It's not just random where it happens. It's got to happen. If it happens in a particular parsha, then obviously it's significant to that parsha. So you need to understand what it's all about. Yeah? Okay. So it says like this. Let's have a look at this parasha first of all. Again, going back to the beginning of the parasha. The beginning of the parasha is always significant, right? So we learned this concept that when Aaron kindled the menorah, he needed to kindle in such a way, again, remember these three words, shalheves oile me'ileha, that the flame must go up, it must go up on its own. So we know this idea is not just an idea with regard to the mitzvah of kindling the menorah, but the mitzvah of kindling the menorah really represents the whole concept the way we serve Hashem. The flame, don't forget, represents the neshama, right? The kindling of the menorah represents the elevation of the neshama, and therefore it's really got to do with how we serve Hashem. How we serve Hashem is a formula of three things in those three words. Shalheves, oile, me'ileha. Shalheves means, number one, there must be a flame. Flame means there must be light. Part of our whole mission of how we serve Hashem is to bring clarity, to bring light into a world of darkness. Into our own world of darkness, is the world of darkness of others, the world of darkness generally. In other words, we live in an environment, we live in a context where there is darkness, there's lack of clarity. Our job is to bring clarity. So first of all, our job is shalheves, to create a flame. Second part of the formula is oile, it must go up. We know that, right? Avodas Hashem, serving Hashem always means we've got to grow. Each person that might be different, but there has to be growth. The whole difference, the whole fundamental difference between a person and a malach, we know we've said many times, is the fact that the person is called a mahalach, he goes, whereas a malach is called an oimed, a stationary being. Jews, yidden, human beings have to grow, right? Okay. Then comes the third part of the formula is, me'eleo, we have to grow on our own, independent. What does that mean? So this is a very fundamental thing, and it's a very, very important concept in chinuch, in education, etc., etc., that we know there's two ways to grow. One way to grow is that we can be given a gift, so we're not really growing ourselves, we're just on autopilot because Hashem is infusing us with the inspiration to do mitzvahs and to learn Torah and to serve Him and to keep growing. But that's not the mitzvah. The mitzvah is that we have to take whatever it is that Hashem gives us, and it has to be shalheves oile me'eleha. It's got to be a flame that goes up on its own. We have to be able to independently grow. Yeah? Another famous story with Yehuda Avner. Yehuda Avner went to, he talks about it in his book, The Prime Ministers. His first long private audience with the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And he tells about it, and he was a guy with, they spoke a lot of politics, Israeli stuff, and then also he had a bit of chutzpah, so he said to the Rebbe, can I ask you a question? Can you tell me what the definition of a Rebbe is? And I need to know, what is this? What is a tzaddik? What is a Rebbe? So the Rebbe told him that a Rebbe is like, his mission is that every neshama is like a candle, and the idea is to light up the candle. The candle should burn and should, okay. So then they went on to talk about other things, and they also talked about what a relationship between a chassid and a rebbe is, the whole thing. So towards the end of the audience, he said to the rebbe, before he went out, he said to the rebbe, like, does the rebbe think you were successful? He said to the rebbe, do you think you lit my candle? Right? So he said. So the rebbe smiled and he said, no, I didn't light your candle, but I gave you the match. Because at the end of the day, lighting the candle actually has to do yourself. Okay. So this is the concept, right? Now, how does that work? So in that talk, the Rebbe divided this into three components. He said lighting the candle and growing, and to the point where it shall have us oile me'eleho, it has to be a flame coming up on its own, burning on its own, has to be on three levels. It has to be for yourself, your own world, right? The world of others, and the world in general, right? In other words, we're here to change ourselves, inspire other people, and to change the world, the physical world, right? She says, what does that mean? It means, obviously, we know that when we serve Hashem, we have to create that clarity within our own world, right? That shalheves, that flame. It has to be a flame, it's got to be warm, it's got to be exciting, it's got to be with life, and that's the idea of fire. And it has to be in a way where it's sustained. In other words, it becomes who we are. It becomes our identity. It doesn't become something that we keep on having to remind ourselves to do. But ultimately, Torah and mitzvahs has to be something that becomes natural. That's the idea, right? In other words, we have to transition eventually from Torah and mitzvahs being something that is foreign to us, that we have to keep forcing ourselves to do. It has to be almost like an imposition, or not an imposition, but we have to always keep reminding ourselves to do something that is a natural thing, right? There's a Gemara where it talks about first of all in terms of, and you see this expressed in many ways. For example, what's an example of this? The example of this is how we serve Hashem generally, but also generally, like how we learn Torah, right? So, for example, the way Hashem gave us the Torah was all based on this concept. Hashem wanted us to own the Torah. He wanted us to, it should be our thing, like that famous story with the oven in the Gemara, where the Chachamim, the Sanhedrin, overruled Hashem, so to speak, right? Overruled the heavenly voice, and they paskin the Shaila, like most of the majority opinion, which was different to the heavenly voice that they heard come from heaven. And then Rabbi Yeshua met Eliyahu HaNovi, and he asked him, what was Hashem doing at the time? And he said, Hashem was smiling, and he was saying, Natschuni, bona natschuni, my children have defeated me. Why was Hashem so excited? Because that's the Pshat. Pshat is, right, we've talked about this before around Shavuos time. But this idea of Matan Torah, Hashem giving us the Torah, but there's a concept of Kabbalah Torah. We have to receive the Torah. Torah has to become ours. We have to own it. It has to be something that we do, that we creative in it, that we able to expand it on our own, and so on and so forth. All appropriate to the way Hashem wanted us to do it. But we doing it, it becomes our thing, it becomes our flame that is burning on its own, right? Then there's the concept of, the Gemara says that a great thing, for example, when there was a great sage of the Torah, of the Talmud, he says that when he comes to a certain part of the Amidah where he's supposed to bow down, he doesn't even have to remind himself. His body just bows down on its own, right? Now sometimes that's understood two ways. You know, it's a negative thing, in other words, you're not being mindful of what you're doing, you're just by rote. Sometimes we also do that, but not in a positive way. Right? We do that because we just go through the motions. But what he meant in the Gemara was something else. He meant that, no, I've trained my body to be so in line with the will of Hashem, and when it comes time to do it, it's natural, right? So this is the idea of Torah, mitzvahs, Yiddishkeit, Hashem, becoming something that we own, becoming something that we're excited about, and becoming something that we don't have to constantly be fed inspiration to do, but it becomes something that is our world, is our identity. Then he says, the same is true with others. Right? Inspiring other people. And then just, he goes through a very beautiful thing here, just by the way, he goes through a whole idea about chinuch, about education, right? Because that's true education. True education is not when you have to keep on telling someone what to do, or keep on training someone what to do, but you do it in such a way where it becomes their thing after a while, right? So a teacher and student, parent and child, generally people with other people, that you inspire people to the point where they have self-inspiration, and that inspiration becomes independent. And then he says a beautiful thing just on this topic. He says there's two ways you do that. There's two ways you do it, both with yourself, others, and the world. One way is, because what happens like this, right? When you inspire someone else, why is there initial resistance? Why do we have resistance? Well, within ourselves, because we know we have an animal soul, which results in a Yetzirah, whatever the case is, right? We have, with other people, there's resistance. People don't want to do the right thing. Whatever the case is, there's always resistance, which you have to chip away at, right? Now, he says in chinuch particularly, he says this idea, particularly when he's talking about education. There's two ways to educate someone. One is that you get them used to doing something. In other words, it's a subtle difference, but it's a very profound difference. One is that you change them. In other words, because one of the translations of the word chinuch is to get someone used to doing something. It's like training, like when you train a dog, for example, right? Or you train, same sort of thing. You train someone to do something they're not used to doing, it's not them, but you train them to do it till it becomes second nature, right? That's one way of chinuch. But he says that's not really the ultimate way. And the ultimate way to achieve this concept of shalheves oile me'ileo, that the flame should burn on its own, is a much deeper way. Not that you change them, but that you reveal to them that that's what they really are. Very different. Right, you see who they really are. You see their real neshama. Just need the animal soul to get out of the way a little bit. But who they really? It's not about changing them from who you are. It's about revealing to them, or revealing to ourselves, really, that we are something different than we think we are. That we are the neshama. That we are Yiddishkeit. We are connection to Hashem. Right? Okay. So then, there's the third part, right? So it's becoming independent ourselves. It's becoming independent with regard to other people. Their flame should burn on its own. But it's also with regard to the world. As we know, one of the greatest missions that we have is not just for ourselves, but to change the world. And to bring Kedusha, to bring Elokus, to bring godliness into the world. And by the way, it's the same thing. There are certainly parts of the world which conceal Hashem, but it's also, when we talk about changing the world, there's also these two parts. It's also about either changing the world, which means breaking the world, changing it, making it different, or deeper, it's actually revealing that the world is not incompatible with Hashem. That this darkness that we see, that appears, a world that we see that appears to be completely inconsistent or incompatible, or the antithesis of what Hashem stands for, really isn't. That's just an external thing. But really, if we dig deeper, right, that's the whole idea that the Baal Shem Tov came to, he says, he came to reveal the pnimius, the inside of what a Jew is, and the inside of what the world is. That the world is actually not a place that Hashem can't be in. It's just we need to do a bit of work. And we need to remove the exterior sometimes, but we need to reveal the true identity of what the world really is. And that is to reveal that the darkness that we see is an exterior, a superficial thing. But really, the inner workings of the world is a world which could be compatible with Hashem coming into it. And it's a place where Hashem could live there, as we know the concept of Dira B'Tachtanim, the dwelling place for Hashem in this world. But the world ultimately is not incompatible. It looks incompatible, but it's not. It's a place where Hashem could live, because Hashem is infinite. Hashem transcends darkness and light. And therefore, it's a place where Hashem could live and can join with just as easily as he can with places of light.
So he's saying, don't do the first option.
He says, do deeper. Yeah. Now, we obviously need...
Don't do it?
When you say don't do it, we need to do it with the exterior. Obviously, we need to remove the exterior. There are things in this world... It's always a careful thing to say. When we say that the world is really a place where Hashem could be in, it doesn't mean there's no evil in the world. But what it does mean is the evil is not the identity of the world. So with the evil, we do have to check. We have to get rid of the evil. And we have to roughen up the world a little bit, right? It's like refining the world so that the rough edges or the superficiality disappears. But it's not about intrinsically changing the world. It's about revealing what the essence of the world is, right? Yeah. Which means, therefore, right, that it's going way beyond just ourselves. Because when we talk about the world, that's much more of a profound journey. We're talking about places in the world or experiences in the world which appear really negative, right? The world's a place of real negativity. I mean, we have that within the microcosm as well. Within our own world also, we have parts of that, but it's more emphasized in the world in general. But if we're talking about bringing Hashem, not just within ourselves, we're talking about not just our own flame burning, but the flame of others, not just the flame of others, but the flame of the world burning independently. The world becomes a place, which naturally is a place where Hashem can live, which obviously ultimately will happen when Mashiach comes, right? So just to give you an example of what I mean, right? It says when Mashiach will come, an interesting thing, the Gemara says, the Mashiach will come, the whole world will be filled with godliness, right? To the point where it says on Shabbos, a person will forget, he's going to go out to his garden and he wants to eat a fig. And he's about to take a fig off the tree. Says the Chazal, the tree will scream, Shabbos Hayoyim, Shabbos Hayoyim, it's Shabbos today. The tree will say, right? So the question is, why does the tree need to say? Why do we say that Mashiach will come, if a person will go out in the garden, he wants a fig and he forgets and he's about to take a fig off the tree, maybe there should be a heavenly voice coming from the heaven, it's Shabbos today. Remind you. No, it doesn't say that. It says the tree will say. What's Shabbos? That's the idea. The idea is, the Mashiach will come will be the ultimate fulfillment of this idea, not that Hashem will impose itself on the world, but the world will be a place that facilitates God. Right? That's the same idea as the flame burning on its own. In other words, the world will be a place of godliness. So the world will resist being violated on Shabbos, if you know what I'm saying. It will be incompatible with the tree. Right? And that's what we have to work towards. In other words, work towards the flame burning on its own, that our environment naturally becomes a place of Kedusha. Where we are, our own homes, the world, whatever it is, it becomes a place of holiness in a natural way, not in an imposing way. Again, it'll only be ultimately fulfilled when Mashiach comes, but that's what we move towards. Which means, therefore, this concept of bringing the flame of Hashem into the world means that it's only properly fulfilled when we're able to take it beyond just the obvious realms of Kedusha and take it even to places which appear very negative. Yeah? Even those places have to be elevated, refined, and ultimately the flame of Hashem has to burn there as well. Oh, Now we can understand the whole thing with the five books of the Chumash and the seven books of the Chumash. How? What's the connection? So let me just share with you a Kabbalistic idea first, which he mentions very quickly, but he kind of assumed knowledge. So we know we've talked about this many times, we have the 10 powers of the soul, right? The three layers of intellect, yeah? And the seven, what we call middos, right? Now sometimes we divide the seven middos into two, the six and the malchus, but generally it's seven. Chesed, Gvura, Tiferes, Netzach, Hod, Yisod, Malchus. Now, one division of that is we divide the seven into two, five and two. Why five and two? Because the first five, it says in Kabbalah, Chesed, Gvura, Tiferes, Netzach, Hod, those are my responses, those are my emotions, but not as they relate to the outside. They the way I feel about the outside, but within me. When do I start, you see what's going on already, when do I start relating to the outside? The last two, Yisoid and Malchus. So Yisoid is relationship, bonding, that's what Yisoid is. And Malchus is actually when I give, right? So it's the two of the seven where I actually connect to the outside. So the first five is the internal middos. The last two is when I give to the outside. Correct? Oh. So when we talk about the Torah, we talk about it in terms of being there are five books of the Chumash and there are seven books of the Chumash. We talk about the five books of the Chumash, that's our relationship with Hashem within ourselves, which obviously is the point of entry. That's how we start. The way it starts to serve Hashem is not worried with the world. Even in Chinuch, when a child grows up, we don't encourage children to be part of the world. We encourage them to be part of the classroom where they learn Chumash, right? Why? Because first you have to build your own relationship with Hashem. You have to work within, you have to have the flame burning of Hashem within you. Right? That's the five books of the Chumash. But when you go to the seven books of the Chumash, later you learn that this concept, this way of serving Hashem, which is the formula, at the beginning of Parshas Baloischa, Shalheves Oile Me'ileo, that you have to have a flame, you have to have clarity. Clarity has to be with growth, but it cannot only be given to you. It has to be from your own. It has to be independent. But then you learn that it has to be a flame that is burning not only within you. It's a flame that you got to take to the world. And taking it to the world means taking it to the outside. You're taking it even to the outer world where there's negativity. So you're taking it from the five to the seven. So if you break up the Chumash that way, the first five are very holy. What's the sixth? The sixth is Vayom Kemis Oyanim. The sixth is the negative. That's why it starts with a negative story. Because the sixth already is the outside. If that's the way you break up the Chumash, the sixth is already negative. And in fact, even the seventh a little bit is, because the seventh is Eilah HaDvarim, which is the book of Dvarim, where Moshe Rabbeinu admonishes the Jewish people, okay, for the things they've done wrong. But that can be understood two ways. You could fit that into the five and into the seven. But where it's very emphasized is the sixth. The sixth is where the five finishes and the seven begins. That's a negative. And even in that world where you've got negativity, you've got complaining, you've got things which are rebellion against Hashem, even in that world, you've got to bring what the Pasha talks about at the beginning of the Pasha, Baloischa Saneris, you've got to bring the flame to burn on herself. So that's the pshat of, it's not, we still have five books of the Chumash, and that's the foundation, and that's where we normally go with. But then you have to take that concept from the five and bring it into the seven. It all happens in Pashas Baloischa, because it's all about the mission that he's spoken about at the beginning of Pashas Baloischa, about the flame going up and burning on its own. And when you break up the Baloischa that way, then you have the sixth Chumash beginning also in Parashat Baloischa. And the sixth Chumash is the one which begins with negativity, because that's the outside, and that's where you have to take the flame even to burn, even in that kind of environment. And then everything fits together. Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.